62 days, if it was the right months. The further discussion. Please call roll on the motion.
Representatives Katz.
Aye.
Cherry.
Aye.
Lindquist.
Aye.
Simpson.
Aye.
Van Vliet.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Rebo.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Senators Burbidge.
Aye.
Potts.
Aye.
Ripper.
Aye.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Aye.
Meeker.
Aye.
Thorne.
No.
Roberts.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Presiding Chair.
Smarter vote than mine.
Aye. 2306, Representative Katz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 2306 makes parents of children under 18 years of age and spouses responsible for a portion of the cost of care in state institutions for the mentally ill and the mentally retarded. As amended by the committee, it also makes parents of children at the schools for the blind and the deaf financially responsible when and if such charges conform to federal law. The bill establishes a maximum payment schedule, which is based upon adjusted gross income in relation to the median adjusted gross income in the state, and a percentage of the standard exemption for a child. For example, if a family had an adjusted gross income of $12,000, their maximum charge would be $21 per month, or 2% of income. A family with income of $24,000 would have a maximum charge of $83 per month, or 4% of income. If a responsible relative is unable to pay the amount indicated by the schedule, the division would then review and make a determination regarding ability to pay, taking into consideration such factors as size of family, essential living expenses, and other mitigating circumstances. The bill also requires development of rules to ensure third-party billings were appropriate and use of funds from this source to offset up to 50% of the responsible relative's annual liability. Families with adjusted gross income under $12,000 would not be billed. The amended bill has a net fiscal impact of $172,609 savings in general fund and $101,000 savings in federal Medicaid funds. Savings to the schools for the blind and deaf are indeterminate and subject to change in federal law. In both cases, charges would be made only for the costs related to residential and other care, not educational services. The additional revenues for this measure were included in the governor's budget for the mental health division. 2306 came from the Substantive Committee on the House of Human Resources. We fussed and fussed and fussed with the table, trying to understand why the bill was before us, trying to understand why this table and not the present method, not the tables used by the mental health for determination of ability to pay for care in state institutions. And we decided that we would adopt the language from the Substantive Committee. And I think the only change that we made was to try to be consistent and add the schools for the blind and deaf to this so that we don't treat those institutions taking care of the mentally ill or the mentally retarded any differently from others. The reason that the table is in the bill as far as the charges are is because the Substantive Committee was very concerned about the present method that the Mental Health Division has in determining ability to pay. It's done by rule. It appeared to be excessive in terms of their charges. The Association of Retarded Citizens, I understand, came to the Substantive Committee, worked at this table. As I said, we fussed over it and then decided to adopt the bill in the form that it came to us from the Substantive Committee. The savings, the bill was anticipated, or the passage of the bill was anticipated in the governor's budget. The Substantive Committee on Human Resources thought it might not be a bad idea to pass 2306. When we got it, we felt we had to adopt it.
Discussion. Representative Katz's motion under discussion is the bill be reported to the House with the attached amendments.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Burbidge.
Mr. Chairman, I oppose this in the committee, and I oppose it now, and I will oppose it if it reaches the Senate floor, which I suspect it will. I was a member of the legislature, as were several of the rest of you, in 1973 when the relative responsibility law was repealed. I think it was 73 or 70, long ago. I think that there's enough pain and suffering that accompanies a family situation and experience when there's a child that has to be taken away from the family and hospitalized in an institution. There's enough family anguish that goes on with having to send a child to a residential school, either the school for the blind or the school for the deaf, without heaping some additional financial penalty on those people. These kind of choices, I think, are very, very difficult for everybody, and they certainly are for me. I just don't think that the state of Oregon is that hard up, and I don't believe that the people who are parents of these kind of special children are apart from the average of us who sometimes have a rather tough time during the years that children are being raised and even after that to have to spend a part of your working income to take care of the rest of the members of the family by these kind of payments. I thought that the state came a long ways toward an expression of humanity when we removed that Relative Responsibility Act and liens against homes. This has got liens against homes in it the same way as when you don't pay the building supplier and the rest of that kind of stuff. I just think it goes in the wrong direction. I hate to see us turning the whole clock around. I was really in agreement with the administration on the federal level the other day when it looked like they began to look forward a little bit with an appointment of a female to the Supreme Court, and I agreed with Tip O'Neill when his expression that that's the first forward thing that he'd seen come out of that administration. I think this is another step backwards into the past, and I hate to see this Oregon legislature adopt the kind of attitude that's on the national level of moving just about as hard as you can go into the past. I oppose it.
You said you were going to oppose it, but you didn't say you were going to dump it.
Mr. Chairman,
is there further discussion? Senator Roberts.
I wonder if Vera would explain something that occurs on page 3 of the bill.
I'm not sure.
And this relates to line 29. I didn't quite understand the context, which says the community health program shall pay the cost of psychiatric care, etc., in the following circumstances. C, payment is made for the first 60 consecutive days of hospitalization. Am I in the right bill here?
No, you're in the next bill.
I'm in the next one. I'm sorry, I jumped ahead.
We're on 23-06.
All right, I thought there was two sections to the bill. All right, I'll get that later.
Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion, Representative Katz.
Let me just respond. I can understand Senator Burbidge's concern, and I think it's fair to say that we all weren't very excited about it. On the other hand, the committee felt that if these children were at home, there would be a cost incurred by the parents just for food and clothing. And that in light of our fiscal position and perhaps even the questioning of public policy, whether people ought to be responsible for the care, at least a small portion of the care, of their relatives in institutions, we thought it would be a good idea to move on with this bill. The table is not onerous. It's fairly low. There is a method of appealing that, and I think the division understood that they were not to hound people the way they were hounding them in the past, to collect, spending, you know, $100 to collect five.
That's a lot of great
mistakes. But, and I guess time will tell.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Question.
Go ahead.
What is the mechanism for determining the fiscal situation of a family? I can't quite follow that because I know there is some degree of sensibility as far as the Department of Revenue is concerned in releasing any information about a person's income tax reports and so forth. I guess I heard the words gross income and those things, and I'm just a little concerned of what the mechanism would be for making an accurate determination of a family's fiscal affairs, and that's a part, I guess, that disturbs me. I guess that's my question, if I haven't elaborated too much.
Well, in terms of the personal income tax returns on page 2, which is existing language, when a person refuses to disclose fully the information needed by the division to make the determination, that the division could use a personal income tax returns. I'm not sure that I can respond to how that initial determination is made, assuming that the parties are willing to disclose it. Is it?
It's willing disclosure.
Willing disclosure.
Okay.
In this particular case, ask them to provide information on their adjusted gross income. In a case when they could not, they said that amount determined by table was inappropriate, then they would work with them to establish what the family's actual financial capability would pay. And the bill delineates some specific things that have to be taken into consideration in that circumstance. So it would only be in a case where you had an uncooperative parent or a parent who refused to disclose any information that the division would be forced to use some dimension so they would help with human information. It's rather unusual for people simply not to cooperate in terms of establishing what might be appropriate in this type of situation. And it's presently available for people who are institutional themselves and responsible for a portion of their own cost of care.
You can't go ahead.
Thank you.
You can't go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, may I comment?
Well, what the division will do is send out a questionnaire to each family and ask them all kinds of questions about their income, their life insurance, all those kinds of things. And if they refuse to fill that out, then they would get a chance to look at their income tax returns. At least that's how it was before we took it off.
It says that.
They adjust it every year according to what that amount comes to and send you a bill for it.
Well, in this case, the family will first simply be asked to adjust their income, and then the table will be used. If the family at that point says that the table is more than they can bear because of some particular circumstances in that family, then the division will work with them to establish what circumstances there are that mean that payment is too high, as established on the table is to be a maximum for any family.
Mr. Chairman, I want to give notice of a conflict of interest.
Yes, that'll be noted. Senator Gardner.
Yeah, I just want to note for the record and then flesh that out with a question to Representative Katz. If the provisions relating to the special school are now unlawful under Public Law 94-142, which is the federal law pertaining to equal education for the handicapped. They are clearly unlawful now. And it is my understanding that the Department of Education will not attempt to apply those provisions until and unless the federal law, 94-142, is modified so as to permit them. So we will not immediately be walking into litigation over this issue.
Correct, and there is an amendment to the bill. Subject to federal law. And that
they will not attempt to start applying that, these provisions, until the federal law is changed.
Discussion.
Mr. Chairman. I note that there is the option for an appeal. On what grounds might a parent appeal? In other words, let's assume the worst situation. The department has filed a lien on the family's house or personal property, as the bill so specifies that they can do, real property and personal property, if I read it correctly, and then provides for the family the option to appeal. My question is, on what grounds would they be appealing, or was that issue discussed?
I'll have Vicki respond to the bill. I'm not as familiar with the details, because we only dealt with the financial aspect of the bill. Vicki?
Well, I'm not sure in that particular case. There's a process that, well, I assume that if the lien was there because they were late in their payments and they hadn't gone through the typical process, the mental health division has a process if the family's income changes, then they have the right and should come immediately and say, we have a change in income, we need to redetermine what's the obligation, and whether or not we're actually able to make any payments. That language in the bill is more of a, I think, a measure to let people know that if they absolutely refuse to cooperate in terms of establishing ability to pay, that the state has a mechanism force some compliance in that situation. I'm not sure other than non-cooperation in the process, there will ever be a in someone's
home. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I can guess what the first appeal would be, and the first appeal will probably be where the Attorney General has issued an opinion in the Department of Education that the public, that 94-142 has been sufficiently abrogated to permit this process to commence, and the Handicap Advocates Law Clinic disagrees with that opinion and the interpretation of the federal law, and this process will start, and they will take the first appeal. That's going to be the first one.
You could also appeal a factual question whether they had your income right.
Yes.
You could appeal probably the abuse of discretion on the ground that you had a hardship case for other reasons and shouldn't be at the same place on the schedule.
That's right.
That's language that's in
I know, but there is a difference which I want to lead to, and I may be wrong, but I'd like to at least bring it out. Assuming what Senator Gardner has said, under the federal act, and I wish I could remember the reference by number, but there is a provision that allows for, citing your example, for attorney's fees being paid, and I think the state of Oregon and currently involved in litigation of a couple of cases where the attorney's fees have exceeded $250,000 or in that neighborhood. So my question is, even though we think we're trying to provide here a mechanism where parents or family members are required to make payments, ultimately, and we're going to save what? I don't recall what you said, Representative Katz, but it sounded like 130-some thousand.
About 173.
I'm fearful that we aren't structuring a situation where we'll waste all that in legal fees on the question, the technical question of the federal question of equal rights or equal opportunity or some other issue, and I guess maybe I'm grasping for something, yet I know the situation exists on equal care or equal opportunity by virtue of the federal act. I wish I had someone from the Attorney General's office here to quiz a bit about that issue, but I don't.
Mr. Chairman?
One of the amendments, the last amendment in the bill, says that that portion will only be employed so long as the federal law permits it.
Right.
And it's not for educational services.
No.
Mr. Chairman?
Not for education.
Let me respond again to what, I think the Department of Education will be very sensitive in how they apply this and the timing. And I think before they apply it, they will in effect get clearance. The majority of the parents, and we've talked to some of them, want to do this. This is not something that we are really forcing on the parents at the school for blind and the school for deaf. They want to do it. And I think that they will be extremely cautious about how they apply this and get what amounts to agreement before they do it. Just knowing the people that are involved in the handicapped education portion of the Department of Education. The risk is there, but I think it is one that can be overcome through negotiation as they go through this process leading to an attempt to get some of this money back.
I have no quarrel with the intent of the parent. What I worry about is the some members of your profession, Senator, are seeing an opportunity to capitalize on an act.
There's only one really one group that does this, and they are not the kind of litigants that would get involved if the parents are satisfied with it.
Ultimately, the act does allow for the state to place a lien upon personal and real property of the individual.
Current law.
Well,
and probably would only. Yeah.
We now have care responsibility for those over 18 in our mentally ill and mentally retarded institutions. And the language that's in the bill, that's not in bold print, is current law that reflects how that process operates. That is current law for those over 18.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Van Vliet.
You find it page 4.
Senator Thorne, I think that the lien aspect would mean that there had been a very poor job done in assessing the parents' ability to pay at the very beginning. And I would think that that would be very unlikely to occur unless there had really been some very poor assessments as to what the parents were able to pay.
Further discussion.
Well, one last question. The division can then, and under the rights granted in Section 3, Sub 4, the division may direct subpoenas to be issued to any witness to appear and adduce evidence and produce records for the purpose of determining financial ability. That would include subpoenaing tax records, I presume.
I think so.
I can't read.
When I read it, I thought so. Further discussion. All right. If there's any members in the hall who are about to vote, I hope they come in. On Representative Katz's motion that A. Engrossed House Bill 2306 with the amendments attached to the agenda of this committee be sent to the floor of the House, do pass. As I say, amended. Call the roll.
Representatives Katz.
Aye.
Cherry.
Aye.
Lindquist.
No.
Simpson.
No.
Van Vliet.
Aye.
Jones.
No.
Riebel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
No.
Senators Burbidge.
No.
Potts.
Aye.
Ripper.
I'll vote aye to get it out of here, but I probably will vote no on the floor.
Maker.
Aye.
Thorne.
No.
Roberts.
Aye.
Gardner.
Aye.
Presiding Chairman.
Well, I was supposed to be. I wasn't there when the vote was
better count.
Aye. It is adopted. 2404. Representative Katz recommends that bill and moves be passed to the House with the attached amendments.
Yeah, my apologies to the full committee. I did not do my homework last night, so I don't know this bill inside and out as I will when I carry it on the House floor. It is a major piece of legislation. that was worked on by the Governor's Task Force on Mental Health, by the Substantive Committee on Human Resources, came down to Ways and Means, and it appeared, if you look at all the amendments, and I've got an amendment, hand amended bill, there was a lot of additional work that had to be done. It is the policy of our subcommittee not to make any major substantive decisions or changes if all parties don't agree to those changes. So you can believe me when I tell you that whatever we have here has been agreed to by Cheryl, by Representative Zajon, by the Mental Health Division, and by the counties. Now, the counties had one or two issues that were issues that they lost in the substantive committee and that we decided that we were not going to deal with in our ways, subcommittee Ways and Means. Also, bill agreed to by all the special interest groups for the mentally ill, mentally retarded, alcohol and drug, and on and on and on. Okay. The amended bill provides for some key changes in programs for the mentally and emotionally disturbed, including identification of the most seriously disturbed as priority populations for service delivery, the chronically mentally ill, a revised list of services more appropriate to the needs of the chronically mentally ill and other seriously disturbed persons. A requirement that community mental health programs and hospitals establish agreements concerning common procedures for admissions and discharges from hospitals. Requirements for basic information to be provided for evaluation purposes. The bill also provides for county assumption of responsibility for acute psychiatric hospitalization and requires both pilot projects and a report to the 1983 legislature by the Mental Health Division on how this can be accomplished. The 1983 legislature, after review of the pilot projects, will decide when and if such system will work statewide. And basically, this is trying to parallel the Juvenile Services Act and the Community Corrections Act, whereby counties reaping, hopefully, the savings from some of the wards or some of the institutions would be able to provide the services for the chronically mentally ill in a much more comprehensive and organized fashion in the community. We did amend that portion of the bill. Substantive committee wanted us to have that go into effect in law. We decided that we really don't know if it's going to work because there was no upfront money as there was in the Community Corrections and the Juvenile Services Act when we started that program. If we had additional funds, I think we probably would have done the same thing and provided money to the counties to do this in the same manner we did for those two other programs. Consequently, we will be looking at some pilot projects. They will come back and share their experience with us. And the next legislative session will take a look at implementing this program statewide. The bill also makes changes across all service areas and gives the authority to the division to contract directly for specialized statewide and regional services for which counties have not wished to assume responsibility. The state now claims that it's questionable and in some cases impossible for them to contract directly with a private nonprofit organization, private or nonprofit organization in the community for services when counties aren't willing to assume that responsibility or can't assume the responsibility for obvious reasons. This provides incentives for fee and other income generation at the local level. It also eliminates the current match arrangement for services which have been designated as basic services. We are no longer requiring the match, 50-50 match from the counties. So we are relieving the counties of the responsibility if they find themselves in a financial situation where they cannot provide those services from doing a 50-50 match for basic services. services. It's our hope that the counties will continue making that commitment, but for those that can't, the state now relieves them of that responsibility. The task force recommended this change for services to the mentally and emotionally disturbed because funds were targeted more directly to alternative services population because of the wide disparities and inequities in county match policies and because of the growing administrative complexity. The committee felt that it should apply to all service areas. That's mentally retarded, alcohol and drug, as opposed to only the mentally ill programs. The portion of this bill essentially moves the state to a more block grant approach with accountability maintained through designation of services and priorities, telling the counties these are the priorities in terms of population, these are the priorities in terms of services you have to provide for those folks depending on the availability of dollars. Passage of this legislation will not affect the recommended budget for the Mental Health Division, which already anticipates substantial retargeting of funds to more serious populations. If you recall, there was a retargeting of about $1.3 million of basic service dollars to the chronically mentally ill. So it parallels what we did in the budget.